What does the selection of the first Latin American and first Jesuit pope mean to Catholics around the world and to those in this region? At age 76, Pope Francis assumed the papacy only a few short weeks ago. Yet there seems to be a certain impatience to learn what his approach will be to some of the major issues before the Church. What about clergy sexual abuse? Will he maintain the conservative approach of his predecessors on issues such as the ordination of women and same-sex marriage? Or will he take a more progressive approach? What should his role be? Joining me in studio to talk about what may or may not lie ahead for Pope Francis and the Catholic Church is Father Christopher Collins, a Jesuit priest and assistant professor of theological studies at St. Louis University. He is the author of The Word Made Love, The Biological Theology of Joseph Ratzinger, Benedict the 26th. Father Collins, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I use the word that people seem to be somewhat impatient to figure out where this new papacy is going. Do you think that's a correct word to use?
Well, I think there's any time a new figure comes on the scene, especially a world figure like this, there's a great excitement and anxiety maybe about wanting to see new things happen, wondering if there's going to be continuity. And I think it's pretty natural among a lot of people, especially within the church. You have a sense of the overall continuity, but you pay attention to lots of little details to see what might be new.
And of course, there are so many issues confronting the church right now, some of which I mentioned, and I suppose that just exacerbates this interest in finding out where the church will be going.
Absolutely. And of course, all kinds of people have their different issues that they're most interested in, some are more popular within popular media, and then some that are more internal to the church. People pay more attention there. So, there's something to keep everybody's attention, I suppose.
Well, it's been only a few weeks, as I mentioned. What have you seen that you think might give hints as to the direction of his pontificate?
Well, I think what most everybody recognizes, and that really strikes so many people, both within the church and outside the church, is a refreshing sense of simplicity and ordinariness. I mean, he's taken the office on, and he still is that world leader, but he is also expressing it in a visual way. Even all these little gestures have spoken very profoundly, I think, to a lot of people. And the gestures are all about simplicity and ordinariness and seeking holiness in a way that's ordinary and not for not in big dramatic ways, but actually they end up being dramatic, these humble gestures that he's been making.
But that really hasn't caught anyone by surprise. This has been fairly typical of his career, if you will, in the church.
That's right, yeah. But yeah, when we see it on kind of international media and so on, it just is striking to a lot of people, and I think very refreshing.
You know, a certain degree of sniping began immediately, and
sure,
that had to do with his time in his native Argentina, mm-hmm, during the so-called Dirty War, those 30 years when despicable things were happening. People were disappearing, there was corrupt government and all the rest of it. I think that's been fairly well documented.
Right.
How do you see that, and specifically the fact that this came up so quickly as a criticism?
Well, I think it's not surprising at all. I mean, if anything, I'm surprised at how positive a lot of the response has been. Certainly he was in the middle of in his role as a Jesuit leader in those early days, the provincial of the area called a province within Argentina, and he was caught in the middle of a lot of difficult conflict and political conflict, and his own Jesuits that he was in charge of are kind of working on both sides of issues and so on, and a lot of confusion and fear in a totalitarian kind of situation. So it was a mess for sure. And of course, nobody comes through something like that unscathed. And it was also well documented publicly. So it's not surprising that those issues would come up.
Specifically that he was silent when he might have been more outspoken about some of the things that were going on.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Now, he is the first Latin American pope, and if my numbers are correct, 40% of the Catholic population of the world resides in that particular geographic area. What does that mean for the papacy?
Well, it's interesting the kind of lag time that works within the Catholic Church, and you know, things that you don't think in terms of days or months, but you think in terms of centuries. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's said in the Catholic Church, and going back to the Second Vatican Council 50 years ago, we're marking those anniversaries now. That world gathering of all the bishops to kind of renew and re-communicate the faith, it was remarked upon then that it's very clear that this is a global church. And yet 50 years later, now we have our first real expression of even beyond not just Italy, but beyond Europe, but now into the Americas. As so, there's a public expression of this global church that everybody knows is real, but it takes a kind of a lag time when it comes to the structures, visible structures.
Well, we want to continue this conversation, but we have to take a break. We'll do that. My guest is Father Christopher Collins of St. Louis University. We are talking about the new papacy of Francis. Pope Francis, that is, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. We'll want to bring you into this discussion at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We will take a tweet at STL on air, and you can also reach us through Facebook. Back with Father Chris Collins in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back to our conversation about the new Pope, Pope Francis. My guest in studio is Father Christopher Collins, a Jesuit priest and assistant professor of theological studies at St. Louis University. You are a Jesuit. The new Pope is a Jesuit. How, if in any way, is this likely to change the papacy?
Him being a Jesuit. I was just stunned, and I know Jesuits all over the world were stunned when this news came across. But I think... maybe in some ways these very humane and ordinary kinds of gestures in the humility is certainly an expression of the spirituality that we're kind of founded on. Now, Jesuits themselves were not always known for our humility, but still there's something at the essence of what the spirituality is, that you follow Christ, who himself became poor, God who became poor and humble to come to be with humanity. And so that's always the ideal of our spirituality. And so that also gives you the freedom to enter into all kinds of different situations in human life and human society. You can be the same kind of person when you're interacting with the rich and the powerful and the poor and helpless. You're always bringing the same kind of humble heart into all these situations, not because you're worried about yourself, but because you know these are people to be spoken to and they're other children of God. So there's something about that spirituality, I think, is already kind of coming through.
You know, the Jesuits are noted for their intellect as a group and collectively. Why has it taken so long for one to emerge as the leader of the church?
Well, there's a whole history to that. First of all, within the Jesuit order itself, there's built in. We were founded during the tumult in the 16th century that produced the Protestant Reformation and so on, and the splitting up of the Christian Church as a whole. And a lot of that was due to the corruption that was going on within the Catholic Church. And so part of the reform movement that St. Ignatius, the founder of the Jesuits, and the other early Jesuits envisioned was, let's stay clear at all costs. If at all possible, let's stay clear of getting into these offices of privilege and power, and let's refuse them, actually. And so that's built into our final vows, actually, that we will certainly never ambition for some of these higher offices. And even if they are offered, we would do our best to try to refuse them. But if you're still called upon to do it, you still accept it.
Do you see anything in him that might suggest that he'd be something of a reformer?
Oh, I think absolutely. In terms of reform in the sense of getting back to the basics and getting to the essence of what Christianity is about, and of course that's been the task for John Paul II and Benedict also. We're very concerned with what they call the new evangelization. We need to produce in a new way a communication of the gospel that's palatable, that people can sense, because it's grown stale. People's reception of the gospel has grown stale. They're not surprised by the gospel anymore. But so we always need to be looking for new ways to communicate the same old truths of humility and love and mercy and so on.
Well, I ask that because of some of the issues that I addressed early on. I'm sure they'll come up during the course of the program. But he has spoken about the fundamental importance of women in the church. Do we read between the lines here?
Oh, I think that's actually Benedict did the same thing in his teaching and preaching and so on. For example, this came up in the Easter season right away, mm-hmm. because that's part of the gospel story. The first ones to profess the resurrection were women, and that's right in the gospels themselves. And, depending on who's in charge of different churches and at different times, that reality can get obscured and so on. But it's obviously part of the essence of our faith, and especially the figure of Mary is really central within the Christian faith too. So
While we're on this particular part of the subject, let's bring in Jerry, who is calling from the Shaw neighborhood of St. Louis City. I think she wants to get into this part of it. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, I'm encouraged by the outward signs that Pope Francis is doing in terms of listening to or being a servant pope. I think the test will be how well he listens and how he listens to those who don't have voice, and that would be the laity, but in particular women. There are structures where women, even without looking at the question of ordination, women could be part of it. You could have women cardinals. There are other places that women can have voice, and really we have no voice now. And so I think the test will be how he addresses the issue of women and them having a voice in the church.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you talk about listening, and it just makes me think of how important actually that was, even though it might be surprising. But in John Paul II and also Benedict, in Benedict's theology, he's always talking about the importance of listening. First of all, to listening to Scripture, and then also listening to the situation of contemporary culture wherever we are. Let's always be in a posture of humble listening to see what the situation is and do our best to try to respond in faith. And of course, Benedict himself was also, he appointed more women to higher positions within the dicasteries or congregations within Rome than anybody had before. And I'm sure, I would imagine Francis will continue to do something similar along those lines as right. Well.
On this subject, we'll take one more call on this from Ed in St. Louis. Ed, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my mother was a woman, and my 15-year-old daughter was a woman. And I think we need to hear that point of view, really. And what I would like the new pope to have an audience with a woman and get their point of view, to get their point of view. And I graduated from St. Louis University in 1972, and I'm telling you, what I see, what Father Biondi is doing there with women, and I don't hear about our former Archbishop Burke. Where is Burke's law in this whole thing? And it's like, but we're fighting against women's productive rights, and it really makes me mad. As I won't say the word.
Okay. Well, got a lot of issues to cover there, but
aren't you happy you came along?
You bet. No, it is. It's very tough, and it's a tough situation. I think it's also difficult, maybe within the American context. A lot of issues that we take to be the most important issues, they might well be for us, but in a global church, it kind of is unsettling sometimes for Americans to realize that some of the issues that we're very keen on here are not issues at all, really, in Latin America and Africa. So that's another part of the challenge of a global figure like the Pope, is he's got to try to listen to and speak to and be sensitive to and keep unity as much as possible with every culture within the world that has all kinds of different priorities societally and politically and so on. And so before you get too fragmented in all these priorities of social and political life, that's why the starting point is always receiving the tradition in Scripture first. And Scripture, there's a sense that Scripture is always kind of illuminating these new issues, and we always have to understand them in new ways too.
I think it's probably important to understand as well that people might be anticipating or hoping for some sort of a sea change of reform. And yet this pope was selected by a college of cardinals, 60% of whom, I think was the figure I saw, had been named by Cardinal Ratzinger, the former Pope Benedict.
Sure.
So there's not likely to be much of a change in philosophy.
No, not in terms of doctrine and so on. But it's but it really is the challenge is always, you know, the doctrine more or less the doctrine develops, but more or less there's continuity within especially the hot button issues. But how we communicate is the real issue. Do we try to communicate these things in a posture of defensiveness, which sometimes too often the church has has resorted to because there's a sense of kind of being under siege? Or can we positively reach out? And there are people like Cardinal Dolan from St. Louis, for example, who's a tremendous communicator of the tradition, but somehow has a way of communicating things in a more humane and palatable way. And I think Francis will probably be somebody like that, or who will at least give it a shot.
Well, a lot of people in St. Louis were disappointed that Cardinal Dolan didn't get the job.
Yeah.
We've asked a couple of people specifically to call in to make their voices heard during today's program. One of them is Javier Rusco, Director of Hispanic Ministry for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Javier, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us, and thank you for waiting during that last phone call. What are you looking for from the new pope?
Well, I think one of the exciting things that I'm looking forward to is certainly paying attention to how he mirrors for us inspires us and lead us into the Catholic social teachings. You know, as we have seen already in terms of his style and his pastoral approach, there's a real attention that I see in Pope Francis emphasizing that rich doctrinal tradition of Catholic social teaching, in particular, raising up those principles of human dignity, the common good, the option for the poor, you know, the care of creation. And those themes, I think, certainly for us as Hispanic and as Catholics, are just exciting to see. You know, his gestures have been in that direction. And personally, for me, I think that, and for many of the members I talk to in our Hispanic community here in St. Louis, we find that very inspiring, and we're energized by that call to look at that rich doctrinal tradition of social justice, of looking at human dignity, those things that I think many of us are excited about and look forward to.
What is it likely to mean for the Catholic population of Latin America, 40% of the world's Catholics from that part of the world? What specifically might it mean that would be a change from what has come before?
Well, in the lines I'm sharing with you, I think one of the things is just a real affirmation of the presence of the gospel values in a particular people, in a particular history. I mean, Latin America has been, and as you know from the history, very committed to Christianity, to the gospel values that I have been talking about, human dignity, the common good, the option for the poor. There are many narratives in many of the Latin American countries where the church has been very proactive and very consistent. So I think for me, as I think of that whole global South, I think that what's exciting is that the change will be perhaps a change in tone, in stressing and affirming and celebrating that rich heritage, that rich Catholic faith that has been there. Just sharing with some colleagues here in St. Louis, too, Hispanic and non-Hispanic, those that are familiar with the narratives of those countries, this theme of social justice, of affirming the common good, the option for the poor, I mean, all those themes have been present in Latin America and continue to be, and the church has been a leader in that in those countries. So I think the wonderful thing is the affirmation and the stress and the celebration that can take place in a much more global perspective.
You know, if you've heard the earlier part of the program, you know that we spent a little time talking about women and the church. Is there any kind of pressure in Latin America that could be applied for the ordination of women, for instance? Or as our friend Father Collins has indicated here, this is really an issue that is peculiar to this country and not talked about much elsewhere.
I think that in terms of pressure, I don't foresee any pressure. But I think how I would tie in this issue of women, I would just simply say that in Latin America, internally in the role of the church, women have been leaders and instrumental in sharing the Catholic faith with their families, with their communities. So from a Latin American perspective, my opinion and sentiments are that women feel that they have been very active in sharing the faith, being leaders of different faith communities in their respective places. So I don't foresee any major push on the particular issue of ordination. What I see is, again, an opportunity for affirming the good work that the women have done and will continue to do, and perhaps raising up a little bit their leadership that has been so instrumental, especially in those countries, transmitting the faith, the Catholic faith and Catholic values.
Well, we appreciate so much Javier Rusco for being with us and giving us your perspective. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you.
Sure.
Anything you heard there that you'd like to comment upon, Father Collins?
Well, I think just pointing to the vitality and that Hispanic in the U.S. Hispanic population is experiencing, and certainly throughout Latin America too, there's a great excitement, and there's already a great vitality within the life of the Church there. That it just sounds different from what sometimes we get accustomed to hearing in the U.S. and maybe Western Europe. There's the kind of narrative that the Church is always dying and it's just on its last legs, and it's mm-hmm. just not the case in the most of the world. You know?
When one saw the pictures from Argentina of following the announcement, that was pretty clear. There was a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah, people paying attention. Yeah,
they were.
Yeah.
Back to the phones. We'll bring in Jenny calling from Belleville. Jenny, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Thank you. You know, as I listen to all this, what I keep hearing over and over is, don't expect reform. Don't expect growth. Don't expect change, real change. What I hear is, oh, women have fundamental importance. Oh, women are leading the faith. But don't ordain them. Don't go that far. Not real change. That scares the heck out of us, being nice about my language. And I'm wondering if there is any serious hope. I know too many former Roman Catholics. I'm a leader in the Mission Church from the Ecumenical Catholic Communion now, but I am a Roman Catholic trained theologian. And I've heard too many people say, if the Church can't grow, I'm not there anymore. Leaders, are they not supposed to move us towards growth, change, as frightening as that is?
Jenny, thank you so much for the call. Let's get a response from Father Collins.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always about growth and change and the path. The question is, what constitutes growth and change? And from the perspective of somebody like Francis and the kind of mainstream of the Catholic Church, is real growth and change happens when you're really listening to the gospel and letting yourself be converted by God, actually. And that might sometimes resonate with the values of the world, and sometimes they don't. So some things that are right within the gospel are very attractive to popular culture right now. Other things are not. They look like a kind of an anomaly. And so what constitutes real change within, from the perspective of the Church, is paying attention to the gospel and letting myself be formed in love that way. So.
You've written about Pope Benedict. Pope Benedict is not very, very far away. What does that mean? What do you look for there? He's going to be in close proximity to the new pontiff.
It really is hard to even imagine. I wonder what the interaction will be between them. I would think apparently Francis is big on using the phone. He's calling everybody all the time. He called his newspaper guy back in Buenos Aires.
But does
example.
He have a Twitter account?
Probably not going that far yet. he's sticking old school with the phone, I guess. But Benedict is certainly within the communication distance there if he wants to consult. But I think Benedict very clearly wants to kind of retire into a life of solitude and prayer and writing and reading and to do. He did a fair amount of that while he was Pope. But that's really what his calling is that life of kind of contemplation, I think. And so I would think he's pretty happy to remain in solitude.
But everyone's certainly very interested in watching to see how this relationship evolves
over
time. Sure,
yeah. And maybe chances are we won't really see any of it. There'll probably be some relationship, but we won't get it publicly.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Got it. Okay, we have to take another break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Barbara Doris, Outreach Director of SNAP. That's the acronym for Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Certainly an issue before the Church. Back with Barbara and also with Father Christopher Collins in just a moment. We'll take more of your calls, too. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the papacy of Francis. Pope Francis, it's only a few weeks old now, a few weeks since he has held that high office. With me in studio is Father Christopher Collins, a Jesuit priest and assistant professor of theological studies at St. Louis University. And joining us by phone is Barbara Doris, outreach director of SNAP, the survivors network of those abused by priests. Thank you so much for being with us, Barbara.
Thank you.
May I ask you what you'd be looking for with Francis, Pope Francis?
I think how we have to judge a person is not by their words, but by their actions. And that's what we're watching with the new pope. We're watching for his actions. I have to say we're a little bit discouraged that one of the first things he did as pope was to go visit the disgraced cardinal from Boston, Cardinal Law. Cardinal Law, more than almost any other prelate in the Catholic Church, harmed children by his refusal to deal with the predators. And for the pope to make him almost his first visit, that to us set off warning bells.
Well, what specifically would you ask him to do?
We would ask him to discipline the cardinals and the bishops that have been complicit in these crimes. Here in Missouri, we have a bishop who is criminally convicted of child endangerment who is still heading a diocese. It would be a very simple thing to say, Bishop Finn, it's done. You're out. You cannot endanger children and remain in power in the Catholic Church.
Hasn't he indicated that this is an issue that he would like to move ahead on dealing with? Seems to me I've seen that.
Yes, he has. He's like I said, he's said good things. But again, there were good things he said, but his actions don't match. He's visited Cardinal Law. He has protected a perp in Argentina that has been convicted, a priest that has been convicted of child abuse. And through his efforts has kept this man out of jail and is allowing him to live across the street from the orphanage where he was abusing children. These aren't good signs. These aren't good actions. And we're judging him by his actions.
Father Collins, this is a toughie. There's no question about it. Your thoughts about what you're hearing and what you've been hearing.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right that the actions have to, they always speak louder than the words themselves. But there have been indications, as you said, he talked to the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, which is in charge of these kind of accusations that come through, and he just reiterated that he wants to keep those kind of policies that have become much more stringent under Benedict. And just to clarify on the visiting Cardinal Law business, though, he was really going to the church where he goes every time he goes to Rome. He has a special devotion to Mary, the Mother of God. That's why he goes to that church with Mary Major, which is where Cardinal Law is living. So he went to go visit the church, not necessarily Cardinal Law. He met him along the way. But you're still right. I think the issue of having the actions be consistent with what we hold, that's the whole nature of the scandal that's been plaguing the church for quite some time now, is that our actions oftentimes don't meet up with the ideals of what we say and what we say we believe that's in the gospel.
The hierarchy of the church in Rome, in the Vatican, is older, considerably older, certainly a lot older than you are. Do you think that there is a significant difference in thinking between, if I can put it this way, forgive me if I'm bothering anyone, the old men and the young men?
Sure, I think that's always the issue with new generations are always thinking about things in new ways, and sometimes you have oftentimes you have a greater attentiveness to the demands of the current culture, and so there's a greater sensitivity that we need to respond because we're creating scandal in popular culture. An older generation has more of a sense of perspective at the same time and stability. So, you know, no matter what organization you're talking about, that's always a tension. Luckily, you do have new generations coming in, but they're also maybe being led by the wisdom of the elders too. So,
Barbara, are you consoled by any of that?
No, because right now we know children are being abused. We know right now children are being raped and sodomized. We can't wait. We have to protect the children, and we have to take actions right now. And this isn't a sea change. It has always been wrong from day one to harm a child. I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, Jesus taught us.
Amen.
Millstone around your neck. This isn't a change. And the Pope has tremendous power. And he could just walk in and say, okay, I'm going to remove Cardinal Mahoney. I'm going to remove Bishop Finn. I'm going to remove Cardinal Calcagano from Italy because they've all done horrendous things. he could say, hey, all these documents in the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith about these horrible crimes should be turned over to prosecutors. Every bishop, you turn over your documents to your local law enforcement and let them investigate them. Tremendous things that could be done almost instantaneously and would really demonstrate a willingness to protect children.
Well, he was only installed a few weeks ago. I wonder if you would say, well, we can give him a little time.
If it was your child, would you want to give him a couple of months? I don't. I have children. I have grandchildren. You don't have a couple of months if it's child safety at stake.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, this will be probably one of the sort of learning curves for him as well, because as we know, the way the Catholic Church has had to face up to these scandals in the past, the U.S. Church is actually far advanced from other churches because of the it's been a kind of a terrible blessing for the church to have such media pressure and political pressure, and that's a good thing. That's obviously people resist it when it comes, but that has helped the church respond and come up with policies, and still certainly not perfect, but also the Catholic Church in the U.S. is far advanced in being sensitive to these things. Europe is now paying more attention as well, and Latin America and Africa probably are lagging behind. But it's one of these things where this is just—it's a kind of a scandal that's new, and figuring out ways to face up to it and falling short plenty of times, but hopefully making progress. But we're not there yet either.
The church needs him to speak out.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think he's going to have any hesitation doing that. But like our friend says, Barbara says, that it's not just words, but it's got to be actions too when the time comes to act.
And I think until those that have been enabling and protecting and shielding the predators, the bishops and the cardinals that have been involved in this cover-up, until they're held accountable, until there's a very clear, decisive message, if you do this, you will be held accountable. You will be publicly punished for what you have done. Nothing can change. In the case in Kansas City, Bishop Finn, by his own rules, would not be allowed to teach Sunday school in his own diocese, and yet he can continue to run his diocese. What message have we just sent to Catholics? If you're a bishop and you commit a crime, no big deal. If you're a regular person and you commit a crime, well, we're going to hold you accountable. It's a very mixed message.
Barbara Darris, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Outreach Director of SNAP, the acronym of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we have another caller that we have asked to join this conversation briefly. That's Jennifer Reyes-Lay, Executive Director of the Catholic Action Network for Social Justice, which describes itself as a network of progressive Catholics seeking peace and justice both in the Catholic Church and in the world. It is comprised of both lay and religious members. Jennifer, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on this morning.
I'll put the same... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I think there's been a great discussion this morning with a lot of voices heard and a lot of people that we minister to in our organization as far as championing, you know, having women's voices lifted up in the church and not just listening to women, but also bringing them to the table and allowing them to be part of the decision-making in the church and the discussions. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of people who have become very hopeful. I think people weren't really sure what to expect with the new pope. And in the first few weeks, we've had a lot of really positive signs of setting forth a more servant model of leadership for the church, which has been positive, but we're still keeping track. We're still waiting to see what's going to happen next and how much, if anything, is really going to change.
Have you seen signs that would indicate that the changes, the kind of changes that you're talking about, are likely to happen?
You know, I think the reality is that the Pope is still within the same structure. He's the head of a hierarchy where it's all men. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. And I do think that's something that a lot of Catholics want to see change. However, I do think there are hopeful signs about his messages for being a poor church for the poor. But we have to recognize, too, that social justice isn't just about the, you know, economically poor. But who are the voices who haven't been heard? And how can we bring those voices to the table including women, including people of different sexual orientations and gender identities, you know, including people from underdeveloped nations. And having that rich diversity in the church, I think, will only make the church stronger moving into the future.
It's a tough job this man has, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a tough job. And, you know, I think the world is watching. So I think he has a lot of power to change the opinions people might have about the Catholic Church, and to see, you know, is this an institution that really can embrace change, that can discern where the Holy Spirit is calling it to go next and be courageous in taking that step forward.
Well, Jennifer Reyes-Lee, I want to thank you so much for being with us and spending a couple of moments and giving us your thoughts and the thoughts of your organization with regard to the new Pope, Pope Francis. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I have an email here from Jeff in St. Louis. He says, I don't expect Pope Francis to promote a sea change in the Catholic Church, but it's worth recalling that nobody expected John the 23rd to shake things up the way he did. And he was elected by a similarly conservative body of cardinals. I guess anything is possible. I agree with other callers that Francis's humble tone and emphasis on the suffering is refreshing. We will see. That's an interesting observation, is it not?
It is. And I think, yeah, I keep thinking, especially in light of the last couple of discussions here, the motto that Francis chose back when he was made a bishop in Latin means that I'm wondering at the fact, I'm kind of in awe at the fact that I am so lowly, I'm miserable even, I'm unworthy, and yet I'm called. And that really comes straight out of the spiritual exercises, the spirituality of the Jesuits, but it's also right at the heart of the gospel, you know, that every single human person is sinful and broken and selfish and corrupt. We all have that in every one of our hearts. And yet God still comes to us to lift us up and to make something new possible. And he knows that in his gut, in his heart. And that's the way forward real reform and real progress within the life of the church is when everybody really has that sense that we're lowly and yet we're called and we're loved.
Should we read anything in particular into the fact that he chose the name Francis for Francis of Assisi?
Oh, absolutely. It's the very same reality, you know, mm-hmm. Francis is the figure of humility. He's almost sometimes referred to as the second founder of Christianity as a whole. He's so much mirrors and exemplifies the spirit of Jesus in the joy that he had, but the joy comes from recognizing that he's poor and that he's humble before God. And then that allows you to become free and compassionate and loving and to speak hard truths sometimes when those need to be spoken as well. You become free when you realize that, in a sense, everything's not riding on me. You're not taking yourself so seriously. You realize that God loves me. And then even though I'm weak and sinful, I can become free and serve. And so choosing Francis as the model says everything that what we've been talking about this morning, I think, you know.
I have another email here I'd like to read. This is from Diane in University City. I think there's one word the Catholic Church would do well to get rid of, and that is tradition. There is no place for mindlessly doing things just because it's always been done that way. It's way past time to drag the Church out of the Middle Ages. Pope Francis has given it a start, but it has a long way to go.
Well, I think a tradition that's understood as stale and do things exactly as they have always been done just because they've always been done, yeah, that notion of tradition is certainly there's no room for it in the life of the church. But it's also a big mistake to kind of go along with whatever the value of the day happens to be or whoever has the loudest voice, you respond to them and keep changing. You're like a pinball in a machine at that point. So the fact is we're part of a human community and a human family within the life of the church, even more so. Are those who have preceded us have learned some things and have experienced God and they pass on what they can to us, but it's up to us in every new age to appropriate that wisdom that's come before us and also to adapt in new ways so that it continues to be life-giving. So a real tradition is in continuity with the past and also open to the future. That's the Catholic understanding of what tradition is.
We'll go back to the phones now and bring in Susan. She's calling from Illinois and been very patiently waiting. Susan, thanks for doing so. Go ahead.
As a non-Catholic, I would just like to compliment the Pope on his stunningly gracious gesture. I thought on Maundy Thursday, he washed the feet of of adolescents, I believe, mm-hmm. in a prison, including two women, mm-hmm. two young women, and one of them was Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just thought that was stunningly gracious.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the great gestures that he's made. I
mean, it just holds all kinds of hope.
Absolutely. And it's that the way that kind of a gesture communicates to the world something. It's amazing, not just that he did it, because actually, in fact, Pope Benedict went to that very same prison and had mass there, I later realized, but I never heard about that. But that Francis went there and made that gesture. The way the world responds to something like that, that communicates a lot, I think, for the rest of us, that maybe our own lives, what's going on in my own life that maybe I can start to live like that a little bit more too, and because it resonates deeply in the human heart, that kind of compassion and humility and concern for another who is forgotten. Hopefully we're not just keeping him under the microscope, but maybe we let ourselves, and I want to let myself be challenged by this witness too, that it's very easy for all of us to kind of get caught in a comfort zone, but we need to get shaken up and put ourselves among people who are forgotten.
Do you think that he is inspiring enough to create a surge of young men into the priesthood and young women into the convents?
Oh, I would think certainly. It'll be very interesting this summer in Brazil. I think it's late July, early August is the World Youth Day when these young people come, usually a couple million. I bet there'll be, who knows, 5 or 10 million in Brazil with the Latin American Pope. But I would imagine there will be tremendous response from young people throughout the world to his, because there's an authenticity that resonates, especially with the young, and that he seems to be showing. And I would not be surprised at all that he himself will really captivate the crowds that come. And we'll see what happens with vocations to the priesthood and religious life. There's already some increase in that in different parts of our own country. But it still is a difficult issue.
You know? Do you think that the church would have to change its position on celibacy and gays, for instance, to do that? We have about a minute left.
For the vocations?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think, with respect to celibacy, of course, there already are certain instances where married men are ordained within the mm-hmm. Catholic Church. But there's something about the part of the freedom that Francis is able to communicate comes from a kind of a single-heartedness that really is at the heart of what celibacy is supposed to be about. That I can say no to lots of other goods within in the world in a family life in order to say yes in a radical way to all people, especially for the vulnerable. So there's something about that singleness of heart that is at the base of celibacy that I think is worth preserving to some degree within the church.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's a tough role for you to play today because we knew there would be people who were bringing up issues that are tough and the church is dealing with or trying to deal with.
And it's reality.
Reality, I give you a lot of credit for putting yourself out there and dealing with it, and you did so magnificently. Father Christopher Collins, a Jesuit priest, assistant professor of theological studies at St. Louis University. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about Bosnian identity and how it's unique to St. Louis, home to approximately 60,000 refugees of the war and genocide in Bosnia-Herzegovina during the mid-1990s. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.